and members from the provincial legislators and the personnel committee secretaries, researchers, etc. I don't see MECs here. The Minister of Finance and Deputy Minister with the Director General, Mr. Buzili, and the whole team from the Treasury, which I call the A-team. The A-team for the past 5 years, that's the time we engage with the National Treasury in our term of office, that comes to an end on the 7th of May, when we, South Africa, will go and decide who will take the country further in terms of this country's administration. Welcome, Honourable Minister and Deputy Minister. We've got present here the provinces, the engagement that we have with the Minister, as well as tomorrow, when we will be dealing with the appropriation side, and that's where Honourable Sekoni and Chani comes in with their appropriation committee on the Division of Revenue, etc. So that meeting will convene then tomorrow. Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, Treasury, congratulations with a very good budget. I've listened to all the remarks and comments on radio and far as possible on TV, and South Africa is at ease. I'm very pleased. That's the overall impression that one gets, and that is an accolade to the Minister, Deputy Minister, and the National Treasury. But honourable members, 4 weeks and a few days ago in January, the honourable Minister led a team to Davos to represent South Africa at the World Economic Forum, to put the case of South Africa. What is very important is the message that was given at Davos, that this country has a plan. That's very important. That came out in the deliberations, and it was reported in the media, also the international media. And yesterday we experienced the allocation of funds to that plan. And it's our responsibility as political office bearers, specific from my party, it's a governing party, but all parties represented in parliament and legislators, to go out to our people and to go and explain how the plan and the budget fits together to take us forward. That's our responsibility. And my meetings in my constituency is set up for coming Monday in Kamiesberg. So I hope you did the same. So we congratulate the Minister on that performance at Davos. Honourable Minister, without lots of to do, we're going to be businesslike, that you take us through the budget, the highlights. We've listened to the Minister yesterday. It was reported last night. It was on the breakfast show this morning. And we've got the Minister and his team here today. So, Minister, I'm handing over to you and the Director General and the Deputy Minister to brief us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon to our colleagues from the provinces and honourable members that are present and others that are also in this room. I want to make 6 points, and then the Director General will sweep through the presentation that I believe you have in front of you. And by sweep, I mean he's not going to stop at every slide, because you've heard much of it before. We should leave time for you. The 6 points are, firstly, this budget ends the speculation about whether we are implementing the NDP or not. The proof is there on page 4, chapter 1 of the budget review, and in the rest of the budget review and speech about what monies we are allocating for what purpose, but also what we've done over the past 5 years in some of those areas. Secondly, we're continuing with our cost containment measures. And thirdly, with the expenditure ceiling that we had put in place, both of which are important factors in what I would call our fiscal realism as we go forward. But we are convinced that we are running a safe and stable fiscal ship, and that there's no need for any concerns at this point in time about the trajectory that we are following. Notwithstanding the constraints we have, we've found money to ensure that the social wage is supported. It still remains at 57% of consolidated expenditure. And as you can see, there are many incentives and other support mechanisms for the business sector, in particular small businesses. The fifth point we make, which has not been adequately covered, but nonetheless let me repeat it, that our economy needs to transform. Black participation in our economy is too limited. It needs to increase. And we need to all make efforts to increase the entrepreneurship in our society, the number of small businesses in our society, increase competition in our society, but also, more importantly, make our economy a lot more agile to seize opportunities that are before us. And the last point is that this budget lays the foundation for the next 3 years or the next 5 years of the future administration in terms of laying down over the last 5 years many different types of building blocks and finding funding for them over the next 3 years so that we can have better and sustained growth going into the future, but also more job creation and more opportunities for people to move out of poverty and reduce inequality in our society. Whether we do so or not, of course, depends on each of the actors in our economy working effectively together to be able to prosecute that. So those are our core messages. Around them, there's all sorts of numbers to support that narrative. And as I said, the Director General will sweep through the presentation, and then we will be available to you for any comments or questions you have. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. DJ.
Thank you very much, Chair, and honorable members and everyone. The first slide just sets the scene by summarizing some of the achievements of the last 20 years. Slide two. Now, I don't have to bore you with that. It's a great story of services reaching the people, enrollment, gross enrollment rates getting very high, and so on and so forth. The following 5 to 6 slides touch on the issue of the global setting within which we are preparing this budget. Summarized, I would say, it sets a picture of a global economy that's recovering, doing better than it had been doing in the past, be it when you look at the U.S., in fact, quite importantly, even Africa. But then hints at the fact that on slide 5, there has been volatility recently since the announcement of tapering in the U.S. From slide 6 onwards, I would say up to slide 9, we then cover the focus for the South African economy. Those slides are about explaining why do we believe that the South African economy over the next 3 years will accelerate in terms of growth from 1.9% last year, although we carry 1.8 here because we didn't know the StatsSA publication before we finished printing, increasing to 2.7 in 2014 and reaching 3.5 by the third year of the of the MTF. So it sets that out. The next set of slides and in a way explains how this will be achieved. I would then suggest that we jump to slides 10 through slide 17. Those are the slides that begin to then indicate how moving from the focus for growth, for revenues, the fiscus is likely to look like over the next couple of years. First, just highlighting the implications on slide 10, and then slide 11, just restating the principles that are known in this House in terms of our adherence to the principles of countercyclicality, debt sustainability, and intergenerational fairness. We do show on slide 12 that unlike in the past where growth rates adjusted for inflation were in double digits, we now have entered the phase where we've got to have the growth rate and expenditure contained at around 2%. Slide 13 sets out the consolidated fiscal framework. Government, that is, plus social security funds. Perhaps the line to look at from that table is the very bottom one, because it gets talked about a lot in the media, that our budget balance will be 153 billion in 2014-15, which translates to 4% of GDP, but drops over the MTF, reaching 2.8 by the third year, which is a good story of fiscal consolidation, which depends, of course, on how growth and revenues perform. If you then jump the next set of slides, because it's different ways of reinforcing this message of how the fiscal framework looks, and go to 18, slide 18, from 18 to 20, it is where we talk about how we will finance the line that I just drew your attention to, because we've got to then borrow with the table on slide 18, just setting out in summary the different instruments through which we will be raising the money, from treasury bills to domestic long-term loans, which is your fixed income bonds, down to what we will borrow in the foreign capital market. If you flip over leaf slides 18 and 19, go into details on the story about bonds. I will not bore you with that, save to just highlight that ever since the story of tapering began, if you look at slide 19, it shows you what people call the yield curve. In other words, the one line is exactly the same as the other. What it shows is that at one point in time, in April 2013, the cost of borrowing was far much lower, I would say roughly about 200 basis points compared to where we are where we were by January 2020, showing again that the pressure on interest rates or the cost of borrowing has been upward. Let's leave then the financing story and just talk a bit about the tax proposals. The tax proposals that are set out from slides 22 to 25 can be summarized to be about giving relief to individuals, whilst at the same time taking care to help support business, I would say in two particular ways. One, making sure that the thresholds, in other words, the levels of turnover at which firms begin to pay taxes and have to complete returns are raised so that it's easier for them to comply, but at the same time they pay less tax. But also moving through to things like specific incentives which amount to tax expenditures, as set out, I think, on slide 35. Now, slide 23. I'm sorry. Let me conclude then by saying the next set of slides, which are about the division of revenue bill, which will be discussed thoroughly in the House. I mean, there is no need to bore you with trying to summarize. It's a very big, sort of very comprehensive legislation explaining the manner in which the minister, rest of government, has taken into account the recommendations by the FFC, working out in detail you know, the formulae that are used where these are applicable, so that anyone sitting anywhere, not just in the country, but anywhere in the world, can get all the data and apply it and arrive at their locations. One of the most transparent ways of determining a location, so that if anyone thinks that there are smokes and mirrors, they can go and recalculate the stuff and so on. So there is that. The last point I would make, which is contained in slide 31, is just the fact that there is an indication of increased use of indirect grants. These are grants whereby, instead of just appropriating them on the appropriation bill and setting them out on the Division of Revenue bill, they are on the National Department's vote. The National Department would build the infrastructure where these relate to various components of infrastructure and hand those over to the relevant province or municipalities, which would then reflect them as assets for them. I think that summarizes the stuff.
Are you done? Thank you, Minister, and to the DG. We recognize co-chairperson Fumadi Wakam Kumat Daba, as well as the following provinces that are present. Eastern Cape, just put up your hand that you see where you are. Eastern Cape, Wiskop, Eastern Cape, a brand new chairperson in the hot chair of the Finance Committee. Northern Cape, Noord-Kaap, you're getting rain this afternoon, you can smile. Free State, Northwest, I say, and Limpopo. There's also a good story to tell about Limpopo and the intervention. But that we'll come to that. Honourable members, it's very important, referring to the Division of Revenue, we are all allocated, deployed to municipalities. In that document, the Division of Revenue is captured what is your municipality going to get for the next year and the two outer years. So they can start their planning now. And that's one of the major issues when we engage in provinces and municipalities, is about planning. Honourable members, we're going over to the session for questions. The co-chair will please assist me. Mr. Swart, I missed the other Mr. Swart. Mr. Lees, three Ross, Mr. Ross, for Gurn, Chabalala, else in that row? Did I miss someone? No. Yeah, I've got you. Honorable Swart.
Sorry, Chair. Thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation. Just this week, Chair, we had the approval of the Land Institution Act, and the Minister made reference to it also in the budget speech and the summaries. But in the MTF for the 2013-14 financial year, an amount of just over 2.9 billion was provided for, you know, for land restitution. But in this actual budget, it came down to just over 2.6 billion. In other words, it came down. But with the approval of the Land Restitution Bill, people are saying that we're going to need $179 billion, you know, to actually fund what is coming up. So, you know, can you just explain to me, please, Minister, shouldn't this figure of 2.6, in fact, have been higher than the 2.9 that was provided in the MTEF?
Police?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and thank you to the Minister and DG. Minister, I'm very happy to hear you say that the commitment to the NDP is strong, and that's great. But I'm just if I remember correctly, the NDP is predicated on a 5% growth, and yet we're forecasting a much lower growth here. So how do we match this? Perhaps I'm wrong about the NDP 5%. I'm trying to draw on my memory. Correct me if I am wrong. Minister, the other issue, of course, is this issue of the debt. Last year, we were told it would kind of peak out just over 40% of GDP. Now we, in the out year, we're going to peak out at 44%. And I think if we go back a year or two, we'll find that there seems to be a moving target. How sure are you that we're actually going to achieve this? Or in the next year, next budget, are we going to see another moving out? Minister, you've quite correctly made much cost containment measures, and I think the cocktail party you threw yesterday was a very clear indication of your commitment to those cost cuts. Absolutely, I think very highly of these things, but my concern is, how do we actually measure this? Have you got an idea of what exactly we're going to save? I mean, it's I think it's very important to send a particular message out, but in real terms, I don't have any feel for how much we're going to actually save, and then if they're not implemented, how are we going to measure that, and if there are going to be any consequences for it? Something that is particularly close to me from a provincial point of view, Mr. Minister, is in 2012. You put aside $4.7 billion for a million solar water heaters. That kind of got off quite to a good start, but it's faded. We hear nothing more about it. I'm wondering whether you can give us any indication of whether that budget was in fact used, and whether we've installed these. And then following on that, what we've had in my own constituency a year ago was a massive hailstorm. And these things were smashed to smithereens, and indeed people are back to where they were before. And there seems to be no way of reinstating these. Is there any budget provision for that? Chairman, I'll leave it at that. I have other questions, but I think my colleagues don't want me to use up all their opportunities there.
Members, the bells will start ringing 10 to 2. There's a plenary 2 o'clock in the National Assembly, so I'm just giving you the time schedules. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the Minister for a very good presentation yesterday, and holding the line in the budget against also populist pressure. We are just concerned with regards to, in holding the line in the budget, whether that would be enough to address the unemployment problem in South Africa that has escalated to 35% if the disillusioned workers are also taken into consideration. And taken the fiscal constraints that you've mentioned, Minister, and we appreciate you mentioning that you're running a safe and stable fiscal ship, but the constraints in the South African economy is certainly immense, and noting that you've mentioned the constraints, we would like to, in terms of the fiscal constraints, note that the 1.9%, as was mentioned earlier, in terms of growth, compared to a 6% growth on the continent, leaves us in a very weak position to reach our goals of decent employment for the poor, and to really create jobs for South Africans. Also, Minister, except for the weak growth rate, we also have the twin deficit budgets still to contain with. The reduction in from 4.2 to 4% is a step in the right direction. It will contain debt to a certain extent, but certainly it's not good enough, and we somehow need to kickstart our economy to see that we get on a projected track that we can really create jobs. Also, of course, the other deficit of 5.7% in the current account, which is highly problematic in terms of not exporting enough, not getting enough investments. And certainly these constraints needs to be noted. Minister, the issue is, in terms of thinking out of the box, would you not consider And this was also reported in newspapers this morning that a very prominent economist, Mr. Mike Schuessler, mentioned that the fiscal constraints will get worse as time passes on, because this is serious fiscal constraints, and that would you not consider privatizing some of state assets? We've seen the problems in the electricity sector. We've seen, unfortunately, the disappearance of the ISMO bill opening up the markets to independent power producers. And will you not consider and give us some guidance in terms of privatization and a more business-like approach? And may I take this opportunity to commend Treasury also on, in terms of the cost of borrowing and the borrowing methodology used, that it is really very innovative thinking, but in terms of now addressing the issue of growth, that we need perhaps more innovative thinking, I would recommend. Chairperson, my colleague has mentioned the debt to GDP, which was 40% that you would say it would peak to, and is now the debt at 44.3% in 2063. And that brings me to the second question with respect, Minister, your reference to the new global turbulence. A very interesting remark, and you said a self-justifying narrative from certain quarters of the developed world. Certainly we need the developed world for good trade relations. I would like to know whether you would be able to give us more information with regards to this, and also perhaps the very important issue of addressing the other twin deficit, the current account. That would be important, linking it to the turbulence that you've referred to. Chairperson, the issue then of fiscal space, if you could also refer us, how much fiscal space do we really have to address the challenges that you've mentioned? May I just take us to another level, the local government level, and I'm also pleased to see that there's local government experts present. We had very interesting Treasury interventions in the past, especially in the 2162 of the Constitution, withholding the funds of municipalities, and we've seen a number of municipalities deteriorating, although I don't seem to see the Treasury involved in terms of taking leadership, as was taken in the past. What has happened, and why can't we continue on the path in bringing discipline to a sector that is completely at certain quarters in disarray? And I can take the example of Kroonstad, Nala, and Mohaka municipalities in my own province. Also with regard to retirement funds, and Chairperson, that would be my last remark, thank you very much for the care that is being taken in terms of giving some benefits to retirement funding. We have seen lately in terms of the Government Employment Pension Fund that there were utterances from very prominent ministers in the Cabinet with regards to redesigning the GEPF for lending purposes, and I would like to have your comments with regards to that. I thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for presenting the budget to us yesterday.
The NDP is a product of innovative thinking. Honourable Kouranov.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just to add also congratulations to the Treasury and especially to the Minister of Finance. Minister, can I, the state wage bill remains, you know, problematic, standing at 39%. In your speech yesterday, you said that you hope to contain it the next series of negotiations at 6.4%. I just want to know, is that realistic? And will you get the support of the unions to contain that? And then, Minister, unfortunately, the big and unnecessary speculation in the media on all the front pages is whether you will remain the Minister of Finance. I know you've been grilled on the radio and you were ducking and diving, not giving us a straight reply with regard to that. But what I want to ask, can I ask you, I really would love to see you being the next Minister of Finance, but can I ask you, if the President asks you, will you be available? Can I ask you that? If he asks you, will you be available? And then to Momo, can I ask you the Tax Laws Amendment Bill 2014, will it be tabled in this Parliament or in the Fifth Parliament?
The question of Honourable Kouranov is a very personal question to the Minister. Each of us must take a decision where you want to be after May. So you're not obliged to answer the question, Honourable Minister, I'll protect you. We recognize the presence also of Honourable Segoni, Chairperson of the Standing Committee for Appropriations. Honourable Chani is present, he just went out quickly, Chairperson of the Select Committee for Appropriations, Honourable Chabalala.
Thanks, Jefferson. Let me join the queue by congratulating Treasury, the Minister, Deputy Minister. I think you guys did very, very well. In fact, you deserve a round of applause for making sure that our country remains stable despite the turbulences that we are facing. My question, I think, is they do not blow. Thank you, Minister. The question is, the first thing that you started about, the issue of the borrowing, of going to about 153. I mean, I want to find out about the appetite to borrow. What brings the appetite? What will bring the appetite for us to borrow at that time when, because we already have, we are saying we might borrow at 153. But also, what is the turbulence that we need to look out for that might get us to that point? I'm more worried about the intergenerational debt that we might acquire. As much as you said, page 7 and 8 says that this is the servicing method of the debt. Just the last question. It's on the issue of the youth tax incentive. You've mentioned that there's about 56,000 already that have applied. I need to find out what are the industries that have shown interest. It might not be explicit, but what are the industries that have shown interest to ensure that they also take on this thing? But when is it? When are they likely to start? Is it within the 3 years, or can they start by next month? What if you can be able to give us that? Because the sooner it happens, the better for us. Thank you so much.
Dr. Luyenge.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also congratulate the Minister for an input that has actually responded to a lot of questions and settled the country. My question, the first one, relates to the tax incentive, which has an achievement already. Is there any methodology that will be employed by the department to ensure that each and every corner of this country, business people are aware of this, and also youth institutions making a contribution to ensure that it reaches all corners of this country because of its importance? Secondly, we have spoken much on the graduation of the country from welfareism to social development. Is there emphasis that the department has in order to ensure that community cooperatives are actually up and running in order to ensure that the wholesale privatization of services and activities is actually done away with, but not in totality, but the empowerment of the communities through organized or progressive structures like your Sango, where the cleaning of primary healthcare facilities, making sure that the database in the and beneficiaries of the social grants are actually topped up by the department in order to ensure that those who are beneficiaries of social grants, they get into the main line and do the work and graduate from the social grants into the mainstream of the working class. Otherwise, congratulations, Mpatiswa, you did very well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Matlamini.
Thank you, Chair and the co-chair. To the Treasury, to SARS, led by the stewardship of Honorable Minister and the Deputy Minister, indeed, it was not an easy walk, but you were able to go through it up to this end. So I would like to say thank you. Mine, Chair and the co-chair, it's not a question, but I would like to actually give an assignment to the Treasury led by the Minister that is it not possible that in the next administration they will look at the price transfer? If we're talking about fiscal sustainability assisted by the economic growth, I think, Honorable Minister, it's going to assist us to pay more attention on this price. What do I mean by that? I'll give an example of a mining sector where a miner produced the coal. And me being the local, I go and buy the coal, but I'm not going to use it. It's for exports. So at the back of my mind, I am saying as South Africa, as SARS, I am not too sure whether we are being given what is due to us because of this price transfer. If you look at what happened to Indonesia, where now it's shifted. You know, the company one has owns another company in whatever country, another country though. And that country, which is the same country, which is the same company, they buy the products at a cheaper VAT or whatever revenues that are allocated for that. But the end of the product, it's not there. It's to the purchaser who is sitting on the other side. So I realize that we've done some bit, Minister, on the customs, but if we can go deeper, because on the exports, we haven't done it that much, and we are losing so much revenue there because of this price transfer. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Van Rooy. Thank you, Chairperson. Minister, congratulations. Also, a very good budget. I read this morning of some of the so-called people that know something about economics made some very strange remarks. But I think overall, it's very good budget. I want to raise three things. Honourable Minister, the first one is the global risk that is still there. We talk about the quantitative easing that is still there, but this thing of the debt ceiling in the USA, remember that some of the departments even closed down for a certain period in the USA, and the intervention there was, according to my understanding, a temporary intervention. So the risk is still there, and also the fiscal cliff. Is that still a risk for us, or if you can just comment on that? My second question is, Minister, what is worrying to me is in the review on page 40, we talk about the cash balance of public entities, which is increasing. And in actual fact, it's not in line with the capital expenditure. How is Treasury going to release those funds, that those surplus funds go into the infrastructure, especially in water? Because I think that is the one that is problematic at the moment. And the last question is this cost containment measures. How is Treasury going to enforce that in the provinces and also in the public entities? Because I think there's a lot of wastage in public entities. Is there any means of dealing with those in the provinces and the public entities? Thank you.
Honourable Ngomo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, to the Minister and his team. I would like to thank you very much for the good work that has been done. You can thank Ofurori Buangamanda, Ngaezubo Zida Wapa, Minister. Ndukwamba Nabo. Ndirindori Buangamanda, Ngaezubo Zwana Wapa. Thank you very much. I think I would just like to touch on three points where I would need just a bit of some clarity on matters. The very first page, that's where we have South Africa has made significant progress over the last 20 years. The second point here is addressing the economy has created so many number of jobs. I think, Minister, one needs to just ask a very simple question over the number of jobs. What is being said here? Are we talking in terms of permanent jobs? Are we talking in terms of temporary jobs as in the some of the expanded public works jobs? Or are we just clumping them up as jobs? and yet some of them may be short-term, so that one gets an understanding of that. The second point is on slide 9. On slide 9 here we have under domestic, the protracted labor disputes. It's quite interesting to note that when it comes to this issue of the protracted labor dispute, it would take into consideration also the first point, which are the further delays in the introduction of new infrastructure, noting what has been happening in our country, a lot of these civil actions that have been taking place, how much of that is actually causing so much of issues into our service delivery areas as well as matters that need to be taken care of. Lastly, on page 18, slide number 17, there's a matter here on the last part, which is the local government borrowing remaining low and stable. I'm not too sure. Maybe it's, I think it's got to do with the type of language that I speak, which were the languages which I actually greeted the minister in when I started. You know, when we say remain low and then it's stable, how is it stable when we have such a lot of labor disputes and labor unrest in all these municipalities? Because stable would mean that things are okay. That is what stable would mean. But low, it would actually be said to be low if things were quite okay and they were practicing a lot of the financial issues around quality care, efficiency, and those type of areas. I'm a bit worried about the issue stable, noting the type of issues that have come up. Like I said, it could be a word which in other languages might be acceptable, but in mine, stable and low, noting the outcomes of the issues that are happening in local government brings quite a lot to mind. Thank you very much.
Okay.
No.
You're right.
There's nothing to interpret.
Okay.
Honorable Nguni. Thank you, Chair. I just remind the Minister and the Deputy Minister that, you know, the late Minister of Sports and also Minister of Police, Steve Chet, he used to say, "You don't praise the fish for fuel. You don't praise the fish for swimming." I think the minister gets the vibe. However, I'd like to say thank you, Minister, for the good budget. Just two questions, short questions, Chairperson. Just two questions, Chairperson. On the issue of tax incentives, usually some economists, not all, some economists believe that tax incentives are a bad practice because in the long term, you erode your tax base. How do you recover the tax base that has been lost through tax incentives and other tax exemptions? My second question, Chairperson, is on the issue of securitization of the debt by the banks. This has got a tendency of conceding the actual debt in the public, not in the public sector, but in household debt. Because when they securitize, you think that everything is normal, whereas there's a lot of debt that the banks are exposed to. As a result, you find the issue of the banks running, or you find the issue that happened in the financial crisis. How much do we have of those banks that have securitized their debt, and that pose a risk to South Africa, with a risk of being rated low by the agencies? Thanks.
I refer honourable members to page 109 onwards in the budget review, where the minister replied to Parliament, actually our recommendations from the four committees, finance and appropriations, so that we have to take cognizance of that and read it. Then we can also report here, honourable minister, in the NCOPs, that Committee for Finance interacted frequently with the MECs for Finance and Provincial Treasuries on a quarterly basis to monitor the fiscal position in provinces, that we don't land up again with a Limpopo situation.
and we can report to this House that there is definite improvement in the fiscal position of provinces since we started in 2009. I just want to note that to the committee. Honourable Minister, the other Honourable Van Rooyen, I missed you, I apologise.
No, and
he's the whip of this team as well.
So you noted the two Van Rooyens, and you gave the senior Van Rooyen a preference. So as a result, I had to suffer, but then it's fine. Very quickly, Chair, Minister, you cited in your speech the issue of self-justifying. That is a narrative that is emerging from some quarters in the developed economies. Now, you know, as I was sitting listening to yourself, I then asked myself, is this more of a blanket approach attitude where even the good efforts, like efforts that we are undertaking in our country, in terms of taking our economic growth forward, are not recognized? Or maybe is it because of some few countries in the emerging economies that this narrative is related? I'll be very much excited to hear if really the good work that we are doing as emerging markets is recognized by such institutions. And lastly, Chair, pardon my little knowledge around the modus operandi of the commissions. It came to my attention that some of the work of the Tax Review Commission has found its way, into your speech. Now, I'm not sure, does that imply there's a preliminary report that they have issued? But also, if there is a preliminary report that has been issued, how does that interface with our role as public representatives in as far as oversight is concerned? Thank you.
Again, apology on both our way that I missed you. Anyone else? No one? Minister? Thank you.
Firstly, thanks to all of our colleagues for the compliments to the team. And they would have made your job a lot easier if the compliments were translated into no questions. But I know we have elections coming, so we have to do some campaigning even in this committee. It's very understandable. No, not for you bureaucrats, it's for us. The NDP, no, let me just start. Mr. Swart, the restitution question, the DG gave an answer to that at the press conference, so he'll repeat the answer to you in a moment. Let me refer the questions to various people and then I'll tackle what I want to tackle. The debt question, the DG and his team, Mr. Schumann is at the back, can handle that. Cost containment, the Deputy Minister can handle that. Solar water heaters, Mr. Simmons, if he has the answer on that one. Populist pressures, I want to reserve for myself, Mr. Ross. Again, debt GDP ratio lower down. The DG will take that on, but I'll help if it's necessary. Local government withholding funds, the Deputy Minister. Retirement funds, Mr. Momoniat. The wage bill, tax laws amendment bill, Mr. Lowe. Mr. Korunov's magical question, you'll get a straight answer. The ETI, Mr. Pillay. There are two sets of questions there. And then transfer pricing, Mr. Lowe and myself can handle that. So, there's a few more about global risks and strange remarks by economists. Not all economists agree, like not all politicians agree too, so one must expect that. Cash balance on page 40, the DG will handle that. Cost containment, the Deputy Minister is handling the earlier question. Permanent jobs and temporary jobs, Mr. Sachs, let's give you some work. Local government borrowing, the Deputy Minister. Securitization of debt, Mr. Momoniat. And I'll come back to Mr. Van Rooyen's question. So let's start with, since the young Mr. Van Rooyen is feeling discriminated, we'll start with him. On the question of the day, it's not a commission, it's a committee, which is complementing the kind of work that was done in the 1990s by the Katz Commission. And what we are saying here is that the world is changing fast. For example, e-commerce and the way in which the Googles and so on of the world operate, amongst other things. So let's have another look at our tax system and see whether we need to complement it in some way. There is a preliminary report on small business. That's what we talk about in the budget review. And we will certainly bring it to the committee for further debate and discussion. On the question of the global narrative, what has happened since May last year is that once the Federal Reserve chairperson announced what some would say in an awkward way, the fact that the Federal Reserve could commence the tapering of quantitative easing, that announcement led to all sorts of turbulence, uncertainty, and actually overreaction. So we saw it in various countries, India and the rupee, to a lesser extent ourselves, Indonesia, and to some extent Turkey as well, and Brazil. Secondly, tapering then began in December for the first $10 billion and the second $10 billion in January this year. And so we now, instead of $85 billion a month, we have $65 billion a month. But clearly the Fed is going to continue to taper. Accompanying that is rising interest rates in the United States, which would mean that it's more attractive to perhaps invest your money there, and so you're getting outflows. Now, what I'm referring to in the speech is that what happened during this period, particularly from October last year, is that some developed countries, for the purposes of, let's call it political deflection, started saying, it's those guys in the emerging markets that are the problem. They must get their house in order. And what we are saying as a South African position is that we believe in multilateralism, we believe in multilateral cooperation, we believe that institutions like the G20 should be the basis for that, and that we live in an integrated and interdependent world. So at different stages, you're going to find different parts of the world in trouble, either on a regional basis or on a development basis. So 2008, 2009, 2010, maybe even 2011, the developed world was in trouble. It's a developing world that came to the assistance of global growth at that time, reaching 50% of global growth at that stage. And so what we are saying is don't aggravate the situation. Whilst there's this financial market rebalancing happening, don't aggravate it with an unnecessarily negative narrative. Inasmuch as we're talking about how we help developed countries to stabilize their situation, let's talk about the same and not rock the boat in a way in which we create unnecessary difficulties. Mr. Mguni, I suppose we are the fish that have escaped the net, you see. So we're the lucky ones. Tax incentives, you're right. Mr. Mguni is a veteran of this committee. So he remembers some of the lectures from Mr. Lowe and others that incentives are bad. But I think we need to take a pragmatic view. one would say don't give incentives to the point where, one, you're allowing yourself to be lobbied by particular industries. Two, that you shoot yourself in the foot by giving incentives to the extent that you're undermining your tax base. And at the same time, take cognizance of the environment you find yourself in and see whether incentives work in order to get people to do things that which the situation requires. For example, giving young people the first opportunity to work. Now, worldwide, since 2008, that has been used in various countries. It took us, 3 years, to debate, whereas we should have done it fairly quickly and we would have seen the benefits of that as well. Mr. Pillay will give you some details of that. So we will manage that in a way in which it acts as an impetus to move on. Incentives are also important, for example, for the motor industry in South Africa. And that's been going on since 19. The motor industry incentive scheme, MIDP, 96. Right. So there's been one or other scheme since about 1990. Now, if you total all of the money that has gone into the motor industry, it's tens of billions of rands. But they employ tens of thousands of workers. They train in fairly advanced technology, those workers as well. Although the senior members of some of the trade unions that represent those workers believe incentives are bad, but their own constituency actually gets the incentives. But that's a different matter, but one that we do need to note. There's the urban development scheme, which has produced results in terms of incentives as well. The DTI manages billions of rands of incentives. That, too, goes back many, many years. And at some stage, if we all return here in one form or another, we can actually talk about it. But even if we don't, and you are here, our bureaucratic colleagues will be around, and you can talk to them. Your securitization question, Mr. Momoniat will handle. Protected labor disputes, ma'am, Honorable Member Nkomo, is it due to delays in infrastructure? You raised also the question of service delivery protests. Some of that will be covered by the Deputy Minister, but protracted disputes don't help anybody. Workers suffer, their families suffer, production suffers, the economy suffers, and ultimately, for example, in the mining sector, we develop a bad reputation for ourselves. At the same time, workers will also have genuine grievances, and whether that's about working conditions, living conditions, or pay conditions. What is important in South Africa is to once again get back to labor disputes being resolved by sitting across the table, not by being disruptive. And we hope that is still going to actually happen. But we mustn't always blame workers for what happens. Sometimes managers also don't do the right things. And so one requires a very balanced perspective in this regard. Mr. Van Rooyen, I don't know if it's senior, older, because they both have bald heads, but I know the SWATs often compete, you see, so I was just wondering. On your other question about the U.S., you're absolutely right. Europe used to be accused of kicking the can down the road, in other words, never finally resolving a dispute, always pushing it for 2 months later, 3 months later. And the U.S., I think, has just resolved that by the end of February they'll have a deal which will cross over. How long, I haven't quite picked that up. So I think if we had to be frank with each other, in each of our countries we will have political economy issues, which means that the politics of the country actually determines how some economic decisions are made or not made. And you've picked on an interesting example that applies to the U.S. There'll be other interesting examples about ourselves as well. So that's the one question you asked. Honorable Dlamini talked about I think she's talking about transfer pricing, which is a big concern for both developed and developing economies around the world. This is a practice where in the course of transacting, particularly between two companies that belong to the same group, you either lower your costs or increase your costs or charge management fees that are not legitimate, and in that way you decrease the profits in a particular area so that you pay less tax in that area. And it's a problem that all of us, including the Revenue Service and their equivalents elsewhere in the world, are tackling as well. So you'll notice that the G20 and OECD have recognized what they call base erosion and profit shifting as a problem. Mr. Low chairs the Global Forum on Information Exchange, and they're moving to a place where you can actually have automatic information exchange. So if you're interested, we can ask Mr. Low to explain what progress they're making in that regard. On Mr. Dr. Luenga's question about welfareism, co-ops, whether people who are getting social grants could be connected to the work, on all of those questions, you're absolutely right. But co-ops don't start easily, and they don't sustain themselves easily. But there's money in the budget, you'll find. I think the DTI has the major part of it, if I'm not mistaken. And some co-ops do work and do provide all sorts of services to prisons or schools or other government institutions. And I don't want to get the Deputy Minister into trouble, but he has some thoughts on this matter. But he can use his discretion on whether he wants to talk about it. Honorable Chabalala, appetite for borrowing. I think we don't have a limitless appetite. Otherwise, we're going to be accused of obesity, like many middle-class people in the world. So ours is constantly arising, and this is also a response to questions raised by Mr. Ross and Mr. Lees. At each stage, maybe every few months now, we have to make a careful assessment of where's the economy going, what's the sustainable level of borrowing, what's the revenue that is actually coming through, and make a judgment call on what is the optimal level of debt that we can manage and that we can credibly say to the world we will actually pay back. And I think it's that set of judgments that need to be made. And you're absolutely right. When do we reach a point where we're going to say we're worried about intergenerational debt? I don't think we are there. But there are other fiscal experts in the room that might want to comment on that. Mr. Sachs in particular, or Mr. Simmons. And of course, as you correctly point out, the global turbulence will also determine costs of borrowing. Those costs are rising for us. But some political parties are making a bit of a meal out of this, because I've just got information about the relative cost of borrowing in Brazil, Turkey, South Africa, Mexico, Chile, Korea, etc. You're welcome to this graph. And South Africa is by no means the worst in the world. So we must stop putting ourselves down on factually incorrect information to suit political objectives or political campaigning at this point in time, because we are unnecessarily harming our reputation in the debt markets and getting no political advantage out of it at the same time. On the state wage bill and cost containment, the first 3-year round is about to end at the end of this fiscal year, next fiscal year, and a new round of negotiations and discussions will start with the unions. And as I've said in other fora, public sector workers are important partners in development and in delivering the NDP. And we hope we can have through the Department of Public Service and Administration, that is primarily responsible for this area, constructive discussions and a conclusion in this matter. Your question about whether I will remain and whether I'll be available, the answer is still the same. The elections are on the 7th of May. The President's inauguration takes place approximately 4, 5 to 7 days after that. And the day after the inauguration, he has the great honor and privilege and pleasure of announcing his new cabinet. I just ask you to wait for that day, since it's only 3 months away. I can't even offer to buy you a whiskey. It's getting too expensive now. Honorable Ross, there's no populist pressure. That certainly, I don't know where this comes from, but it constantly arises, because I think we all work within different paradigms and see each political party operating in a particular kind of context, and as if it's held victim or hostage by a particular situation. I mean, some of you would pride yourselves on being particularly pro-business or pro-this or pro-other. I mean, you must be facing populist pressure as well. Advance this against that cause, and advance, ask this question of the minister, and so on. So I don't think we must make it look like this is a government problem. I think all of us who are in politics will be approached, let's put it neutrally, to put forward certain views. I mean, I can hear them in the questions somewhere along the line. So as far as we are concerned, we're doing an honest day's job. We're trying to ensure that we keep both the fiscus and the economy more broadly on the straight and narrow, and we will continue, as you said, to hold the line. On the question of unemployment, there's no magic formula, or there's no magic silver bullet. What we need to do is, A, within the state's capability, offer whatever we can in terms of job opportunities, in terms of training. Within the private sector's capability, offer learnerships, offer apprenticeships, offer the first opportunities to get job experience, share with the state the responsibilities for skills development as well, give rise to opportunities for small businesses within the value chains that operate within South Africa and within the region, and at the same time, find ways of stimulating the economy. Because ultimately, that's the key. And both ourselves and the private sector, that is government and private sector and the unions, carry a joint responsibility. And I'm not going to elaborate on that because you've heard me talk about it as well. So on the question of fiscal space, fiscal constraints, growth, as I said earlier on, we will constantly monitor developments, constantly monitor what's happening in relation to economic growth, in relation to revenue, and make sure that we stay within sustainable limits in anything we do. On the current account deficit as well, I mean, I'm sure if I hand over to the economists here, they'll give you very elaborate and correct answers about we are growing, we're investing, we have to bring in capital equipment. Some of that will be aggravated by the fact that we now have a depreciated currency. Secondly, yes, it is true, exports, both in terms of resources and other elements, have been damaged by some of the events of over the last year. Manufactured exports have switched to some extent from Europe as the destination to Africa and SADC as the destination. And of course, we do need to keep both portfolio flows going and encourage more foreign direct investment. The thing is, can we take collective responsibility for some of these things and create a climate that will enable us to do so? Mr. Schussler, you mentioned we respect his views, but I'm sure there are lots of economists with lots of views on this matter, as Mr. Van Rooyen was saying earlier on. And we'll keep the debate going about where we go. You asked about privatization. I think that's a very old word. That belongs to the era of Reagan and Thatcher.
Yeah.
And I think the Reagan-Thatcher era has left us with lots of troubles, including the Great Recession. And what happens when you lose sight of what balanced regulation needs to do within an economy and within a financial system. What we will agree with you is that we need to find innovative ways of raising finances. But to date, as my Director General colleague will say to you, give us the project and give us the responsibility of finding the money. Let's not elaborate too much about what might be needed or what might not be needed. But I'm sure he'd like to comment in this area as well. Mr. Lees, the NDP and 5% versus our forecast. You know, the one thing about us, Mr. Lees, is that we're very frank and open. We don't hide behind numbers. We tell you when we think this economy is in trouble. We tell you when we think we're recovering, but we're muddling through at the moment. And we'll equally tell you we can't afford to muddle through, and we need to do something really spectacular, both as the private sector and government, in order to get to what we collectively agree is a 5% target that begins to make a difference on unemployment or employment, whichever way you see it. So yes, there's a gap, but we can't stare at the gap and be paralyzed by it. We need to get on, get down and implement things and do things and make commitments which will begin to make a difference. Let me invite the Deputy Minister to cover the areas that he wants to cover, then the Director General, and then the other colleagues that I mentioned.
Thanks, Chair and Chairperson and Minister. I'm asked to deal with the area of cost containment quickly on page 35 of the budget review. I think even though you've got a much broader, but on page 35, you actually get a fuller story. One of the things we're saying is that the area of containing costs means that and some people interpret this to mean, you know, things are not going to be done. But what we're saying is that you need to find a cost-effective way of doing things. How do you handle resources? And I always say, every time you look at containing costs, it's looking at the rent that you have and say, how would you spend this rent if it was your own? I think that's the bottom line. If it was your own, would you buy this? If it was yours, would you buy it at that price? If it was your own, would you really die if it wasn't bought? And I mean, I think that is where it starts. But what we're saying there, we have items that we are talking about where, you know, we show that having revised, these are the items and these are the changes that have arisen. But also that we are working with the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in order to be able to do some reviews also. And that report will serve before the committee where you will be favored with actual information that the committee will engage with. The other question with that related to cost containment also was talking to the state-owned companies, and I would want to believe that all of them actually do report to Parliament, and when they do report to Parliament, we expect that Parliament will also rigorously engage with those state-owned entities in order to ensure that the oversight is done properly. Municipalities, even there also, we also have those issues, but with interventions and everything, I think in the whole chapter on provincial and local government, chapter 7, pages 101, if you look at page 101, there is a box at the top of page 101 that talks to improving audit outcomes and reducing corruption in municipalities and audit findings. We must also not make a mistake that it's only just the audit findings. Improving the quality of and the capacity of municipalities goes beyond just taking care of good audit outcomes. But does that translate into a better service delivery to our citizens? That's a question that we should be looking at. Page 103 also talks about building that capacity and how much money we're putting into that in order to ensure that municipalities are able to deliver on their mandate. That also talks to the borrowing by municipalities. Municipalities form part of the broader sovereign borrowing requirement. So at the end of the day, we actually have a responsibility of ensuring that when municipalities borrow, they borrow also within that framework. We therefore have that unenviable task of ensuring that when municipalities also get into the borrowing mode, they do that within within our capacity to be able to service the debt. Minister, I won't go into the other matter relating to the social, I think it's a matter that Parliament should engage with as to, because it's not just the sustainability, but also whether it doesn't have perverse incentives, and how best do we make sure that that is accompanied by the necessary safeguards that say that when the state grows its social wage, the social wage addresses the problem of poverty, inequality, and making sure that the lives of our people are improved for the better, rather than just being a supplementary income to some of the recipients. But I think it's a debate that at this level should be engaged on. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The land restitution question about the bill and how the allocations in the estimates of national expenditure appear currently. What's very important to remember is that now that we've implemented land restitution for several years, we know what it takes to implement it, both from the point of view of the process that we've got to go through and having that process ultimately translating into a cash outflow and an exchange, a change of ownership in relation to a particular piece of land. So the allocations that you see are not allocations that have been imposed by the Treasury on the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. They have been agreed with them in a very considered kind of conversation, understanding that the bill was coming, it was going to be passed even before this MTF has run its course, but also born out of the an appreciation that it really takes time to start the process where someone lodges a claim and having that claim translating into a transfer of land and a payment for a piece of land. And so it's very important to bear that in mind. And, of course, to understand that those are the numbers that we have now. We monitor the situation every time. When something changes, in other words, if the speed of processing the stuff gets fast and weighed against other priorities, and government feels that this one now supersedes the others, then the process of re-examining the allocations will take place. What wouldn't work is to put money into the program when we know the history that we know, that roughly the amounts that are allocated, they are within the ballpark of what is feasible in any given year, because we'll be just adding to under expenditure and inefficient allocation of scarce resources. The question of cash balances of state-owned entities is a very important one. We started the process a while back, I think 5-6 years ago. In fact, it dates back a little earlier than that, where we instituted a process of intergovernmental cash coordination, which we were doing at first between ourselves as national government and provinces to make sure that we pool the resources and ensure that neither of us ends up having to go and borrow expensively when some of the borrowed money already is sitting as a positive cash balance against another institution's account. I don't know if I'm making sense here. National government may have a cash surplus at one point, which may be a combination of revenue that SARS has collected plus some borrowed money, because the drawdowns may be slower than the amount of revenue that's in the accounts. But one province may be needing more money. Perhaps this is a better example, or an entity that is allowed to borrow may be running out of cash. So we agreed that we should be able to borrow from one another within that arrangement, of course with some interest. We have extended that to state-owned entities. We have even now this time around instituted a process where we say to them, if they think that the interest that we pay them is not high enough from that intergovernmental cash coordination arrangement, they can invest in the instruments of the other entities, but within the public sector, rather than going out and putting the money into some risky investments outside of that. So that's how we take care of that part of the business. On the financing of infrastructure that the minister had asked me to add, I will just use the one example that we talk about, that's written about in the review, and the minister mentioned it in his speech as an example of an alternative way of raising funds. I mean, the IPPs are not a small thing. The independent power producer contracts that government has signed, I think about 47 of them, adding up to about 70 billion, because what those mean, plus another 45 billion coming over the next couple of years, it's not a small amount, and what it means is that the private sector will put its own money, take the construction risk associated with building these plants, and only when the plants are generating energy will people pay, you can say government, but people start to pay for that energy when the benefit is coming. Excellent arrangement. As long as you get the sharing of risk within that arrangement right, it's an excellent thing. The last point I would like to talk to is the issue of the debt peaking at 44% of GDP. The debt as a percentage of GDP is not something that we target. You wouldn't set out when you budget to say our debt must be 44% of GDP and then you work backwards necessarily. It is an outcome. Series of decisions which you have got to make sure they are right, and then they get you to that outcome and you say it is sustainable. But this talks to the issue of growth, in our view. It talks to the issue of growth. If we achieve the GDP growth forecast that we set out, if we do the things that are set out in the NDP, some of which we cover in the budget review, the minister covered a couple of them in his speech very well, I would say, if we do them, if we unlock the constraint, for instance, imposed on this economy by inadequacy of energy generation, if we deal with some of the regulatory impediments to growth, and again, in the speech, the minister mentioned the development that honorable members will be familiar with around the area of mining, where there has been some streamlining of the approvals that relates to mining license, water license, environmental impact assessments, which will cut the time it takes from application to the sinking of a shaft. That, if you get that right, and several other things that trigger growth, then you get a bigger GDP, your denominator favors you in terms of that 44%, you get bigger revenues, which means you borrow less, your numerator is also smaller. So at the heart of this is us as a country being able to achieve growth, and we have a plan for it. It is beginning now to translate into some granular stuff closer to the ground, so to speak, that will enable, and we're confident that we should achieve this and in time achieve even better stuff than that.
Chairs, I'll give you the three main sectors that are accessing the employee tax incentive. This is subject, of course, to full reconciliation that we do twice a year. But the preliminary trend is like this. Financial intermediation, insurance, real estate, and business services. That's the one sector. The other is manufacturing. And the third is the wholesale and retail trade, catering and accommodation. That's the three main sectors that are accessing the ETR. Thank you.
Mr. Munyard, followed by Mr. Simmons, followed by Mr. Lowe.
Thank you, Minister. Just
Mr. Sachs.
Say very quickly on the ETR also, there's there's dozens of workshops we're having all over the country to spread the word. With regard to retirement reform, I think the idea is that we would have more information that we intend to publish in the next week or two that will outline the steps the minister announced in greater detail. On the debt, I'm not sure what the question was on securitization, Minister, you mentioned. Oh, I think whether they securitize or not, I think is one issue. I think let's get to what the difficulties are, because in that instance, we're more concerned about what happens to the borrower if there are problems and what's the role of the bank. But it's something that I could take up with the member directly.
Thank you. I'll talk to the solar water heaters issue. It remains a significant program of government, particularly in regards to alleviating pressure on the environment, but also bringing warm water to small households and supporting local industry. There's about 3 billion rand allocated to it over the next 3 years, which the ENE will talk to, and it remains a policy of the program that 70% as a minimum is manufactured locally, so that's an important link with the local economy. To date, we've spent about 1 billion rand with 420,000 units expected to be delivered by the end of this financial year.
Chair, on the 3 points that I've got to respond to, the tax laws for 2014 will in all likelihood only be passed in the second half. I don't think there will be time in the before Parliament closes. Now, transfer pricing, I think the Minister touched on what it is and the developments internationally. But from an operational point of view, I can assure you that we are, from a SARS point of view, concentrating on it, not just from a customs point of view, but also from a tax point of view. And we have, in fact, over the last few years, not just collect millions in unpaid duties here, but in fact billions from different industries. On the automatic exchange of information, that's the new standard that the global that the G20 has set. It will mean that financial information will be exchanged on a reciprocal basis between countries on a government-to-government point of view. The financial institutions will collect the information, pass it on to the government institution, which will then pass it on between the countries. The standard is being developed. It will be finished later this year. I think exchanges will start happening towards the end of 2015-16, and monitoring will start in 2017.
Tax, last word. On the question of jobs and permanent jobs, I would refer the Honourable Member to page 2 of the budget review, where there's a graph that shows jobs since 1996. We've drawn that data from various publications of Stats South Africa. It does include both formal sector and informal sector employment. Of course, behind every quantity, there are many questions of quality. And one can go into the data that Stats South Africa publishes and ask many questions, but I think you'll see in that graph that there has been a sustained increase in the number of people employed by the economy over that period.
Chairpersons, honourable members, thank you very much.
Minister, to you and your team, thank you for the briefing. Honourable members, we haven't adjourned yet. Those people at the back. We recognize the presence of Professor Jahat. He's a bit small. He's sitting there at the back. Can you just stand up? The director for the Parliamentary Budget Office. We recognize you. And then, honorable members, Mrs. Gordon is also here. We recognize you. And ma'am, we thank you. And we give our appreciation for what you are doing to support the minister. Thank you very much. Honourable members, our next engagement will be the public hearings on the 4th of March and then again on the 5th of March to consider the report regarding the fiscal framework and the revenue proposals. Thank you for provinces that attended this meeting and to your inputs. Honourable members, this brings us to the end of the meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Sharp. 4 minutes past two. How did you work one? Thank you.